It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. It is So Thorn in the Side Thursday. It's the 17th day of October 2019. This is the Horn. Damn. What a day. I'll just get just so that that singular bit of sadness doesn't get lost in the madness. I'll begin with the grief I felt at the passing of a great man, which I noticed upon arising this morning at about 6 a.m. I speak, of course, of Elijah Cummings, representative from Maryland, who had faithfully served his constituents over the course of, decades. I think he entered the House of Representatives in 1996 and remained faithful both to constituent and oath over the course of his long legislative career. He was he was 68 years old. He entered the Maryland legislature when he was 31 and was driven by a desire to see that entire we the people working toward a more perfect union idea fulfilled, or at least in part, by his own dedication to service. He was, without a doubt, a shining exemplar of what Abraham Lincoln described as the better angels of our nature. And we will be the poorer for his absence. He was a moral pole star in a time of immoral chaos. And Elijah Cummings deserves to be well remembered. Well remembered indeed. So, in the time of sadness and grief, to his family and all those who knew and loved him, may the peace and joy of his memory live on in their own. Yes, yes indeed. No one believed the tweet that Nitwit Nero sent out, because it was... Well, it partook of essential human decency. And we all know that Nitwit Nero is incapable of that. I'm thinking that was one of those tweets that Dan Scavino sends while Nitwit Nero is howling and filling his depends. It's been a day. But being a day, it is a day that begins like every program here at the Horn with gratitude. Thanks going out to our subscribers for this 17th day of the month. That would be Gary Laborman and Nancy. Thank you to Gary and Nancy for being partial sponsors of the program. Remember, our subscribers cover about a quarter of the month's fundraising needs. Now, where we are at this point in time is the fundraising goal to finish the week is $685. It would be $485 this evening, $685 including tomorrow. I asked Brother Deacon Asa to just put $685 up because the upcoming weekend is a big deal here in my neck of the woods. And while Bridge Day itself is only one, it's only a portion of one day, there's an event that takes place the Friday evening before Bridge Day called Taste of Bridge Day. It's hosted by the combined Rotarians of Oak Hill and Fayetteville. And I don't often say this, but given the stresses of the last few weeks, last few months, really. It would be nice if we could finish off fundraising this evening. And then I was thinking of perhaps taking Agnes, who needs the break more than I do, to Taste of Bridge Day tomorrow evening. It's a lovely setting. It's a tourist complex and restaurant and everything that has decking that looks straight out onto the New River Gorge. And there will be a lot of tasting going on. So, if it doesn't work out, you know, I'll be here Friday on the front porch. Doesn't matter. But the fundraising goal to finish the week is $685. And then, just as a reminder, we will finish the month a week from tonight, which curiously will work out to be our Horniversary. Our birthday, as it were. On Thursday, the 24th of October, 2019, we will celebrate the day that this program went live in October of 2005, and we will be actually 14 years at this, plus the couple of years ahead of it. Doing this from America's fifth smallest radio market. People like Jim and Steve from Georgistan and Dave in South Carolina, a couple of others remember those days. Oh, Brother Deacon Asa, you may have been a Padawan little ray of sunshine, but I think you've achieved true Jedi Master status. Brother Deacon Asa getting us started this evening. $50 challenge. Please, Bob, jump off the bridge challenge to get things rolling. Well, you can ask all you want, but I'm not jumping off a perfectly good bridge. With or without a parachute, and God knows not with a bungee cord. Sorry, no. I'll leave that to the people who come from out of state to do that. I wouldn't want to take their fun. But thank you for getting that out there. If that happens, we'll be down to 585 to finish the week. But how to, and I know I say this a lot and I apologize for it, but it's like, it's every evening is like sitting down to a dinner of a whole elephant. And at first, you look at the elephant and you think, no way, ain't gonna happen. But then, because the challenge is there, and it's in the moment, and it's in the situation, and it's in you, you realize there's nothing to do but go at it one bite at a time. That's how you drink an ocean, too, one gulp at a time. And so, after a while, you decide on where to chomp down first. Thank you, Jim. Jim saying Elijah Cummings was a great man and a good eulogy. Thank you, Jim. Scott in San Diego, R.I.P. Elijah Cummings. And yet Dick Cheney somehow still remains upright and above ground. For all those doubters who think there's no God, well, there isn't. I know. Well, see, Elijah Cummings was not willing to prey upon living flesh in order to continue to live. Count Dicula, on the other hand, had no such compunction, so there he is, still walking around with some decent human being's heart beating in his chest. There's a world of difference between somebody like our friend Dan Fisher, who had lots of good life left to live, and for whom I am grateful that he got a heart that someone was kind enough to make it possible, and somebody like Dick Cheney, who miraculously jumped to the front of the line and probably has some Falun Gong heart or Uyghur heart beating in his chest that he got on a deal with the brutal authoritarians in China who share his mindset. I know. But what it comes down to, after I stared at the elephant for a little while, what it comes down to is it's all a matter of perspective, because there's another story about an elephant. That if you ask two or three people who are sightless to describe an elephant simply by what they feel, what they can touch, you will get a radically different description based upon which part of the elephant they are appraising. The person back there feeling the tail and back at the business end of the elephant is probably going to come up with an entirely different perspective than the person feeling the trunk or swinging from the tusks or patting the flanks. And so it becomes a matter of perspective and perception. Those two, taken in tandem, will more likely inform how we respond to a given situation or stimulus than any other factors. Being humans, we tend to go for logic and reason only as a last resort. By way of another example, today we had to get up and get going fairly early, went across the river, and when we walked outside, on the morning of the 17th of October, 2019. Did I do the high on Bob Kincaid part? If not, I am. And it was frigid. It was hateful. And by frigid and hateful, I mean, low 40s. But the wind was blowing. So that meant for the first time this year, or the first time this fall, I pulled out my westerly sweater, otherwise known as my dude sweater, and it stopped every bit of wind that went through. But the more I thought about it, the more interested I became in my own perceptions. Because I, and more particularly Agnes, well, we were cold. Funny thing is, though, upon further reflection, if we'd had, though, and it rose up into the 50s by noon, if we'd had that 54 degrees and it had been late February in these parts, we'd have felt like, hey, it's warming up. Get out the short sleeves. It's not going to be long now until naked radio weather. But when it happens on the 17th of October, the response is diametrically opposite. It's freezing. And it's not going to get any warmer. And what I say about this time every year, Jesus Christ, I may not be warm again until May. And resisting the urge to turn on heaters and go and buy kerosene and refill the 20-pound tank so that I can then refill the little reusable bottle that Tom in the Bay Area so kindly provided. Cut down on the waste from buying the disposables. Thanks, Tom. It's handy as hell. It all depends on how you look at it. And I guess, too, we can say the same, because this wasn't just an aimless stream of consciousness babble. I don't just do things. We can say the same thing about each and every day, with the caveat going forward, as ever, that however weird yesterday was, we know today will be weirder. And however weird today was, tomorrow will be weirder still. It's kind of a daily affirmation. Confirmation. It may be the kind of thing that you need to say right before bedtime here in Trump-merca. Right before bedtime, you kind of get in the lotus position and you put your thumb against your middle finger and you go, om, for a little bit, or you make the noise that my coffee maker, oh, and you say to yourself, today was weird, but tomorrow, will be weirder still, and the day after that, even weirder. And it gives you a little strength. And then when you start seeing stories and you ask yourself, is it this way or is it that way? You may just realize that it all depends on how much information you have to hand, how much analysis you're willing to give it, what your biases are, and the degree to which the people creating whatever it is you're examining are willing to try to manipulate you for money and or power. And for that matter, most of this lies at the heart of advertising. As well. It's all manipulation. But one, that the genesis of that idea came with a story I saw earlier today to the effect, and the story came from Bloomberg News, and their reporter Laura Litvan asked about the resolution, which we discussed on this program yesterday, condemning Nitwit Nero's Syria shenanigans. You know, the one that only garnered 60 maggot votes in the House, that saw even the House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy and friend of the Klan Steve Scalise, both inveterate maggots, voting against their God Emperor. Well, Laura Litvan at Bloomberg reported that McConnell said, in regard to the House piece, the House resolution, my first preference is for something stronger than the House resolution. And then continued to say that McConnell wanted a resolution that specifically states how things should go down in Syria. McConnell said, the House resolution is curiously silent on the issue of whether to actually to sustain a U.S. military presence in Syria. And so, from that perspective and perception angle, on the one hand, you could look at it and say, oh my God, the tables are turning. Mitch McConnell's really... But then you look up and you go, oh, wait a minute. This is Moscow Mitch. Come on! He's a chaos agent. He's Moscow Mitch. Many, many, many sweet rubles have gone into his purse. And so, with that in mind, you realize that what Moscow Mitch is trying to do is to throw the Senate into chaos and then have the Senate battling tete-a-tete with the House over the language of the resolution so that it becomes a hopeless mishmash before it can ever get to the desk of Chlamydia Claudius. Man, you got to watch careful. Because that chaos would, of course, inure to the benefit of Julius Caesar. But while these games play out, oh, and by the way, I have to acknowledge something Brother Deacon Asa pointed out. And I have to, and by the way, Brother Deacon Asa's Bob, won't you please jump off the bridge challenge has been met. Thank you to Vincent. Thank you, Vincent, very kindly. So that means we're down to 585 to finish the week. Thank you, Vincent. Thanks a bunch. That's a huge beginning. But Brother Deacon Asa pointed out earlier in the day, he said, remember how yesterday you talked about a manufactured crisis that the venereal Vespasian was going to find a solution to? And just to recap, what I said yesterday evening was, look, here's how it'll play. He's created the problem. Now they'll claim to have solved the problem that he's created, and the maggots will then say, oh, look, He's brilliant. Well, there it was. After having first had the bloodthirsty dictator Erdogan throw Trump's little crush note in the garbage. You know, they started the advance into Syria the day that they received Trump's call you later letter. And then when it was said that Mike Pencil Neck Geek, who is already up to his pencil neck in impeachable offenses, when it was announced that he would be going to Turkey, Erdogan said, well, cool, I'll meet with Trump, and snubbed him. But then, because this is all theater, the next act had Erdogan saying, oh, I'll sit down with him. And so there's a photo today of Mike Pencil Neck Geek sitting in a room with Recep Tayyip Erdogan. And it's interesting because when we host foreign heads of state, we make a point of putting the United States flag behind the president. And then we provide the other nation's flag for that other nation's leader to sit or stand before. Not so over in the former Ottoman Empire. Mike Pence, having no sense and no sense of protocol and really not much in the way of actual patriotism, unless it's to some prosperity gospel evangelical grifter church, gladly sat down with the flag of Turkey flanking Erdogan and himself. The flag of the United States nowhere to be seen in the photograph. Oh, wait, I'm wrong. There's a little tiny American flag on a table in between the two of them. You know, the little tiny American flags that you can order by the 100,000 made by some 9-year-old kid chained to a table somewhere in China. Yeah, there's one of those. But the whole point was that they agreed that Turkey allegedly agreed to a ceasefire in Syria, as announced by Vice President of the United States, up to his neck in impeachable offenses, Mike Pencil Neck Geek. There's only a couple of problems with it. The first being that the whole thing is utter and unmitigated bullshit. But out of all this, I got a new nickname. Yes, we've heard from Cousin Crocodile Kincaid and Cousin Igor Kincaid and the like. Well, according to Brother Deacon Asa, I am now CK. And not even remotely like, as in Louis C.K., because I don't recall at any point in time doing anything like what he did. No, C.K. stands for Clairvoyant Kincaid. And it's just another case of being so far out there ahead of the curve here in our little community that compared to everybody else wandering along, it's like we're on straight road. Brother Deacon Asa pointing out, it's kind of comforting in an uncomfortable way, if you think about it. At least we know what kind of insidious shit's coming our way. It's not, it, well, yeah, and, you know, to be fair, it ain't exactly comforting for me either. And sometimes it's just a matter of looking at something with an investigatory eye and asking yourself, what would a crook do? Well, you can never go wrong asking that question in regard to this gang of petty shit-heel grifters. Now, you just wash your mouth out with Octagon soap. Brother Deacon Asa said, you do naked radio. That's close enough to Louis C.K. Does that scare you? It's enough to make me never do naked radio again. I'll sit in here in sackcloth and ashes next summer. Maybe sweat off a little water weight. Well, there went dinner in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. Sweaty Bob. Yeah, as Jim notes, so much for protocol in Turkey. What's new? Used to be that protocol was something that mattered. But that's just the tip of the... That's just the tip of the bullshit. There was so much bullshit flying around today that it was... Well, it was... It was like Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, only with fecal matter. Darlene in Connecticut says, I'm a much bigger wimp than you, Bob. But I also live further north, and due to this bombogenesis thing, or whatever they call it, it was downright cold, rainy, and raw today. Still is. So I'm not waiting. My heat's jacked up to 72 degrees. Costly, I know, but again, I'm a wimp and a summer girl at heart. Well, I'm a summer guy, too. And that's not particularly good for me, as pink as I am. And with my first new iPhone in about 10 years, I remembered I could now download the Sharktivity app and see that barely 12 days ago, there'd been a shark sighting off the Cape. Barely 12 days ago. At least Amy and Frank, a couple of great whites that had been tagged and named, have moseyed on down to the Florida Panhandle. But sadly, not us. We're kind of stuck here in the cold north, but I do find such contrasts interesting. Oh, it all is. And it'll keep the little gray cells there, betwixt one's ears, busy. A couple of notes from Kyle. The news of Elijah Cummings' death today was like a gut punch when combined with what's being done to our country by people who combined don't add up to half the person he was. Also, the fact that Count Dicula is still alive thanks to someone else's heart is more proof that evil never fucking dies. Kyle also notes, I was really looking forward to eating this spicy meatloaf my mom made tonight. Keyword is was. Thanks, Bob. Yeah, why not? I know. But it's all a matter of perspective. On the one hand, the maggots are out there saying, see, he solved the problem he created. What a genius. Meanwhile, anybody with a pair of neurons to rub together realizes that nothing is as it seems with this gang of thugs. Because no, whatever the Turks say, they're not gonna do. It took almost no time at all before the real Turkish foreign minister, not the Turkish to foreign minister that the precious Lindsay thought he was talking to when he was talking to the Moscow Morning Zukru 97.5. Boy, there's a lot going on down here by Kremlin. Talked to him on the phone and recorded it for everybody to laugh at it. No. Now when they write Turkish names, there's a lot of squiggles that I know what to do with if it's in French, but no clue in Turkish, so we'll just kind of take a run at him and pretend the squiggles aren't there. Pyotr Zelensky reported, Turkish Foreign Minister Cavusoglu just now. We will suspend the peace spring operation for 120 hours for the PKK-YPG to withdraw. This is not a ceasefire. That, of course, that statement was made immediately after the White House announced that a ceasefire had been reached. Oops. By the way, Pyotr Zelensky is the Turkey correspondent for The Economist. The best that Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geek could get was a 5-day ceasefire. And then Foreign Minister Lots of Squiggles Cavusoglu said, not a ceasefire. We're just pausing to let them withdraw. Guess what happens after they withdraw? The Turks go to where they withdrew to and keep on slaughtering them. Because slaughtering them they are. Over at CNN, I saw a letter that was written by a woman married to a special operations member of the United States military. Her husband's been all over the Middle East. At her request, because the maggots would attack her mercilessly, and the maggot media, CNN did not disclose her name. But she wrote the following letter. Dear Kurdish soldiers, many of whom, incidentally, are women, which is part of why Nitwit Nero despises them so much, because they are strong, brave, fierce women, and any time he runs up against one of those, he ruins another, depends. But this wife of the special operations soldier said, Dear Kurdish soldiers, you don't know me, but I've known you for most of my adult life. When my military husband and I quickly married, knowing he was deploying to the Middle East to be part of the 2003 invasion of Iraq, editorial note, W's illegal war of choice, I feared what he and his special operations unit would face when they arrived. How bad would the fighting be? How long would they be gone? Would he survive? Months later, he returned and recounted to me what he could about his experience. I asked how he had made it through. He replied, "We had help. We had the Kurds." He told me stories of how the Kurdish people in northern Iraq supported the troops, advised them, stood by them, fought shoulder to shoulder with them in combat, and became allies and friends, and I became grateful, immensely, unwaveringly, and forever grateful to you. Since then, the word Kurds in my home has meant something. It has meant ally and friendship. There are pictures of Iraqi Kurds alongside my husband and fellow soldiers in our home. I have a coffee mug with depictions of female Syrian Kurdish soldiers on it that I proudly use to remind me of you. My children play soccer in their Kurdistan jerseys. The Kurdish people are not nameless, faceless people across the world. You hold a place of honor and respect in our home. It's important to me that all of you know that. I owe you so much. My husband is home safe today after years of fighting, and I know you helped make that happen. But now I watch the news in horror. I see promises broken, progress destroyed, years of hard work and unimaginable sacrifice gone in a tweet. I see allies betrayed, their faces in my picture frame. While watching the news, my children turn to me and ask if those are our friends, and I say yes. They have looks of confusion on their faces. I can't imagine what your families are going through. I can't imagine their fear. I can't imagine these things because for the last 17 years you fought to help us keep an attack off our soil, and I know that that has now compromised your safety. It breaks my heart. Where I come from, a person's word means something. Our honor and integrity are everything, as I know yours are to you. To read in international newspapers that the United States, my country, has abandoned the Kurds is absolutely heartbreaking. I will editorially note, sickening. I will also editorially note, not at all surprising for a guy who has betrayed every human being who's ever done anything for him in any construction deal, any real estate deal into which he has ever entered. Dante said the lowest level of hell was saved for the betrayers. They've got a spot. They've had a spot with Donald Trump's name on it for generations. Hasty decisions like this have not only put your people in terrible danger, they make the situation for our soldiers there on the Syrian-Turkish border much more difficult. My husband was with you on the border not long ago, and I can't imagine what our soldiers' families are feeling right now. And it's not just safety. It's hard to imagine how difficult it is for American soldiers to hear a partner and allies' calls for help and not be allowed to answer them. It's also hard to imagine you having to turn to Putin or the Assad regime for support because you could no longer count on Americans to keep their promise. I worry for the safety of you and your families. I worry about the instability of the region and what that could mean for the future. I worry about the thousands of ISIS fighters we worked so hard to put in prison and who you must walk away from as you defend yourselves. I can't imagine the threat that now poses for all of us. I see the look on my husband's face when he watches the news at the end of the day. The only phrase that comes to mind is, "I'm sorry." I write you today on behalf of my family to say thank you for everything you've done for us. Thank you for your friendship, for keeping your word and fighting alongside us. For staying the course year after year, thank you for keeping my husband safe so he could come back home to me and my children. You have my sincerest prayers today that you too may safely return to yours. Thank you to your families that sacrificed without you so you could make this partnership happen. I pray we return to your side, that we stand by you, and that this has not all been in vain. Forever yours, a grateful wife. I take that as sincerely written, and I take her reference to prayers as sincerely offered. But I have a question. Ma'am, when you went to the polls in 2016, how did you vote? It's a simple question. If you cast a vote in favor of Donald Trump, you voted for what you are now decrying. In 2016, the maggots and the little Stein weirdos and the lot said,
"Oh, Hillary's going to start World War III."
When the entire time anybody, again, with a couple of neurons to rub together and create a thought, understood that the idea of Hillary Clinton as president scared the fuck out of Pooty Poot. And probably didn't do any great good for the restful nights of a bloodthirsty dictator like Erdogan. I am pro-peace. I am anti-war. We never should have been over there, but we are. Barack Obama did the right thing getting us out of Iraq, no matter how many Lindsey Grahams out there say that somehow this is Obama's fault. That's just because he's a sleazy, filthy, nasty partisan politician who forgets that we're over there because of a pair of bullshit wars started by a pair of Republican presidents, father and misbegotten son. That's what that is. But how did any of these people vote? Precious Lindsey's been played like a pawn shop fiddle, thinking that as long as he sidled up and snuggled up to Donald Trump, he would remain relevant and keep Trump from doing something stupid. You poor, sodden fool. Donald Trump thought no more and thinks no more of Lindsey Graham than he thinks of a bug that he doesn't even see but steps on as he walks out to Marine One. Megan with a note says, body language. I'm thinking Nitwit Nero doesn't read body language. The thing with the tiny American flag versus the Turkish flag reads as Erdogan thinks Trump is his bitch. And the photo yesterday with Nancy, Trump thought it displayed how nervous Nancy was, when in fact Nancy looked like she was owning a room full of men, some of whom were hanging their heads in shame. Trump looks defensive, scared, and backed into a corner, yet Trump thinks this makes his perceived enemies look bad. What the hell gives? Those people are Otne Ute Aitbre, if you own a what I eme, Stephanie Grisham, Mick Mulvaney, the lot of them. By this point in the road to impeachment of Bill Clinton, he had a team of the best minds of his generation gathered around him, and they formulated a winning strategy against the madcap Republican Congress that guaranteed he would exit impeachment more popular than he entered it, and he did. And that photo, we're talking about a photo on the radio, so that's not always the best idea in the world. But that photo, yeah, showed three members of Trump's advisory staff hanging their heads and unable to look Nancy Pelosi in the eye. And Trump looking confused, dazed, unsettled, shaken, maybe even stirred. Jane Mayer, whose work I respect over at the New Yorker, also observed, and there's not a single woman on the Trump side of the table, while there were women on the Democratic side. Forgive me, I don't think it's snark, it's reality. But really? Jane Mayer is perceptive. Sharp. Damn good reporter. And she honestly thinks that room would have been made better had it had the single greatest failure of American immigration, Elaine Chao, included in it? Or had it included a woman who runs the education department but despises the idea of public education, Betsy DeVos, it would have been better with her in it? Or that somehow the tenor of the meeting would have been improved by the presence of Iwanka my daddy, Trump? Kushner? I guess solely from a perspective of, because that's the password tonight. The password is perspective. From a perspective standpoint, maybe the optics would have been better, but the outcome wouldn't have. Oh. Oh. Scott in San Diego says, subject line, clairvoyant Kincaid. He peers into his crystal crockpot, and his prognostications are unequaled. Well, yes, and peering into my crystal crockpot, I have the benefit of using my seeing spuds. Oh, this bit has real potential. Steve in New York says, something tells me, I'm no supporter of the military. I despise violence and killing of any organism down to an amoeba. However, I feel for many troops because I think the enlistees have no real choice. Because, you know, that whole business about not having to follow an illegal order. I have the sneaking suspicion that that little lesson is delivered in basic somewhere after the 15-mile forced march and right before chow. In the space of about a minute and a half. Oh, and y'all don't have to explain any, y'all don't have to follow any illegal orders, okay? We square on that? Hoo-ah! All right, go eat. Get a shower, go eat. I fear that the suicides will skyrocket from the humiliation and PTSD Donald Trump, yes, Donald Trump, has inflicted on them from this betrayal. Words don't exist and never have to truly express how disgusting and putrid this rust-colored animal is. I know. So on the one hand, the Turks said, not a ceasefire. We're going to slaughter the shit out of them. And and for their part, on the other side of the wire, Trey Yingst, who is a foreign correspondent for Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, said that the Syrian Democratic Forces, the Kurds, our friend, have rejected the idea of the ceasefire because, quote, it achieves Turkey's original goal of moving Kurds from the border and having them give up heavy weapons. See, that's the whole genocidal aim of what Turkey wants to do. They want to kill all the Kurds on both sides of their border. In what we nominally once referred to as Kurdistan, and which they hoped would one day be recognized as a nation unto itself for them. You know, like we did for Israel. So what does that mean? That means the slaughter is going to go down. And all we can do at this point in time is hope that the Kurds are as good as they have proven to be thus far, and that they can, because, you know, those are probably conscript troops, the Turks. If you've ever played Risk, you know that in the rules of that board game, the defender has an advantage. Because the defender is presumably defending someone, some place that is near and dear to them, you know, home, and which embodies the very reason they're fighting in the first place: their families, their children, their future, the honor of their past. And now it remains to be seen whether Erdogan is enough of a sleazy war criminal gut bucket to do what Bashar al-Assad has done and that is to use chemical weapons. You know, while they hold our nuclear weapons hostage that we never should have had in a place like Turkey in the first place. Obligatory Star Trek reference coming from Lee in New York. Because Halloween Head probably only thinks of the turkey to eat when he hears the name of the turkey that kills Kurds. The only Star Trek classic episode to mention turkey, the bird, was Charlie X. Kirk, on Earth today, it's Thanksgiving. If the crew has to eat synthetic meatloaf, I want it to look like turkey. Thank you, Lee. We need those. So all in all, and no one is surprised, Mike Pencilneck Geek and his hasty trip to Turkey was an unmitigated failure. And we, along the way, are a laughingstock. You know, at the end of the program yesterday, literally as we closed things up. Oh, and we are at right at the top of the hour. And thank you to Vincent, and thank you to Brother Deacon Asa for the challenge. We're down to 585 to finish the week. If we can take it down some more, it would be magnificent. Trying times is all stressful. And bills to pay. The second half of the month, yeah. There's a lot sitting out there. But 585 wipes out the week, and then we wipe out October, Monday through Thursday of next week, and finish up on our anniversary, our Horniversary. It was kind of a big deal when the New York Times published an op-ed today from William McRaven, and not just William McRaven, Admiral William McRaven. And again, toward the end of the program yesterday, right at the end, I brought up the fact that for reasons known only to him, despite the fact that he has now been openly sleazed by the President of the United States, that squared away, buttoned down, 4-star Marine General James Mattis still appears to be too timid, too afraid to speak out for the good of an imperiled nation. Not so of Admiral William McRaven. Some folks were surprised that William McRaven was willing to speak so plainly, but he did. The headline to his op-ed piece at the Times, "Our Republic is under attack from the President. Our republic is under attack from the President." If we are being attacked, if our, and the language is important. One, it refers to the fact that we are a republic. It doesn't say our democracy, which still bothers me every time I hear it, because democracy as an idea in this country ever has been more aspirational than operational. but the structure imposed by the framers and the ratifiers of the Constitution in 1787 was that of a republic and was built on the ancient Roman model. And by saying that the president is attacking our republic means that William McRaven is saying that Donald Trump is a domestic enemy of the Constitution of the United States, to which he, when he was a commissioned officer in the United States Navy, was oath-bound to defend against. William McRaven is saying that Donald Trump is his enemy. More than that, however, because the subject of the attack by Donald Trump is the Republic, he is publicly saying that Donald Trump is our enemy. In every Thomas Paine, these are the times that try men's soul sense of the word. It's chilling. But it is also inspiring. I'm going to take a break. I've got to do, this is a family thing. I just got a message. I need to call one of our children. We'll come back to this. We'll go to the Green News right now.
It's Thursday, October 17, 2019.
A terrible threat to the safety and health of every American in terms of the climate crisis.
Climate change.
Climate change.
Climate change.
Climate change.
In latest Democratic debate, the moderators didn't want to talk about climate change, but the candidates sure did. Climate protesters shut down parts of London, plus...
This all started with a huge blast.
Another fossil fuel explosion and fire, this time near earthquake-prone San Francisco.
All of those blasts and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Kids all over the world went on a climate strike. Apparently they're pissed off that we've robbed them of their entire future and killed the planet.
Whiners. If you don't like it, get your own planet. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I don't get it. The majority of Democratic voters routinely select climate as one of the top two issues of concern to them, and yet, in debate after debate, the mainstream media moderators don't seem to want to talk about it.
Yeah, and remember how in September CNN hosted a marathon 8-hour-long town hall on the climate crisis with all of the 2020 Democratic presidential candidates? Yeah, those were good times. Maybe CNN felt that that was enough and it freed them from ever having to ask about climate change again, because during that 3-hour-long Democratic presidential debate on Tuesday in Ohio, moderators with CNN and the New York Times did not ask a single question about it. There was time for a question about bipartisan friendships, but the biggest existential threat facing humanity that threatens human society and all life on the planet and will require a massive multi-generational effort to solve? Nah.
Well, yeah, but, you know, Ellen DeGeneres watched a football game with George W. Bush. That's worth spending 15 minutes on, isn't it?
A handful of the 12 Democratic candidates briefly mentioned climate change, like billionaire climate activist Tom Steyer. In his first appearance in an official debate, Steyer quickly pivoted from a foreign policy question about Russia to climate change.
Let's go to the most important international problem that we're facing, which no one has brought up, which is climate. We can't solve the climate crisis in the United States by ourselves. It's an international crisis. Any problem that we're going to do, but specifically climate, we're going to have to lead the world morally. We're going to have to lead it technologically, financially, and commercially.
Well, that's good. I'm glad he brought it up. That said, he's spending $100 million on his campaign that I'll bet he could spend in much, much better ways.
Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont also managed to maneuver a question about a federal jobs guarantee into talking about addressing climate change as a massive jobs engine, part of the new Green Deal resolution he proposed in Congress.
We have an infrastructure which is collapsing. We could put 15 million people to work rebuilding our roads, our bridges, our water systems, our wastewater plants, airports, etc. Furthermore, this planet faces the greatest threat in its history from climate change. And the Green New Deal that I have advocated will create up to 20 million jobs as we move away from fossil fuel to energy efficiency and sustainable energy.
Oh, Bernie.
Meanwhile, in other news, an explosion and fire at an oil storage facility on Tuesday near the San Francisco Bay Area community of Crockett sent a huge fireball and toxic smoke into the air. Nearby residents were ordered to shelter in place with their windows and doors sealed. The fire at the New Star Energy facility is now contained. Officials are investigating if a 4.5 magnitude earthquake the day before may have triggered the explosion.
Well, there sure are a lot of explosions and fires at refineries in the Bay Area, aren't there?
Yes, and the risk of earthquakes in the Bay Area is a growing concern because of the vast network of aging fossil fuel infrastructure that runs throughout that county.
Oh, I'm sure it'll be fine.
In England, protest group Extinction Rebellion blockaded the London headquarters of Google on Tuesday to protest the company's funding of some of the most notorious climate denial groups in the United States, which was revealed recently in an expose by The Guardian.
It was. Google it.
More than 1,600 protesters have been arrested during the group's two-week civil disobedience campaign demanding that the UK government accelerate action on climate change. But finally, some good news. California Governor Gavin Newsom signed a bill that effectively bans all new fossil fuel production within national monuments in the state. It prohibits state agencies from approving permits for new fossil fuel infrastructure on federal lands in order to block the Trump administration's efforts to expand oil extraction in California. And starting next year, the state will ban the sale of the toxic pesticide chlorpyrifos, which has been linked to brain damage in children because the Trump EPA failed to do so.
Oh, Trump ain't going to like that either. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. And don't forget, as we approach the 1,000th Green News Report, you can support our efforts at bradblog.com/donate. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Well, hate to do this, but I'm going to cut the program short this evening because there's just some things you don't say, oh, okay, and move on. Just got some news from our youngest, who is far, far away from us. I haven't talked a lot about it, but she was about 26 weeks along with our grandson. And she messaged me during the program and said that she needed me to call her, and I told her I was on air and was it an emergency, and she wrote back, said, yes, emergency. And so I called her, and she informed me that the little fella's heart just couldn't make it. Wasn't developing right. Wasn't okay. And that he had died inside her. happens every day. But as I've been learning the hard way a lot over the last few months, there's a big difference when it becomes personal. So, with your kind forbearance, don't worry about, I'll be back tomorrow. I'll be back for Friday on the front porch. There's not a lot I can do right now. I can't run to her. She's more than halfway across the country. But I can be here when the phone rings. And this is one of those moments when it's kind of hard to bring your focus around. So, again, my apologies. Back tomorrow. And all our love to you, and thank you for all you do, and thank you for being here for the program. Whew. These last few months, this month in particular, I'll be back, but I need some time with Agnes, and we'll probably need some phone time with our daughter. Thanks, everybody. Later. I love you, son.